So we're going to do something a little bit different tonight. And Ben Fisher, who some of you have met, he's been gone for a little while and was back last week, was going to talk tonight. And he let me know when I was in court that he was going to be in Kentucky and wasn't going to be able to make it back. So we're going to spend some time going over a couple things. And so I've titled this, Let's Move the Needle. And what I've noticed, for those of our, when I gave my testimony or talked about myself before, I told you I was 59 years old, and time flies, and it may not seem like it. So time really flies. It really does, and it sounds funny. I don't, it's just hard to believe that you get that old set that quick. And something that no one really taught me a whole lot about was that the path that you take each day determines where you're going to end up years later. And yet none of us can say, oh, I want to be different today and make radical changes. But what we can do is make little adjustments in our lives, little tiny adjustments. I look at the example of just, I don't know if people have been on a cruise. I actually haven't, but I've seen a cruise ship in the bay, and it just goes so slow. And yet the course that it takes determines whether it's going to be way out here or way out here. And it's just a very minor adjustment that it makes that takes that big ship, and it's the same thing with our lives. And so we are so busy, life is so hectic, we're in survival mode, that a lot of times we're just trying to survive, we're just trying to make things okay. But we have the opportunity to add something into our lives, which is just a little change, and just making a little adjustment in our lives. And those little adjustments turn into big deals later on. And so that's what I wanted to talk to you about, and that's why I called this Move the Needle. Because if each day, if this says where I was, where I am, and where God and I want to be, you can't jump very fast. You can't, it just is a slow process. But if you take little changes every day and just work on something little, you will be a different person before you know it. And so it's just an important concept. So I put this together. I'll just read it real quick. We all know a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And it does. And so we think we want to leap. We think we want to change things big time, or I want to do this. And, you know, I'd love to play a musical instrument. But you can't. You can't learn it like that. It takes practice day after day after day. And then all of a sudden you realize, whoa, I can play this instrument. And so that's kind of how the process works. And so it's difficult to make complete changes in our lives. But specific positive activities in our life, very little ones, will make a huge difference. And so what I did is I put this together. I put those bullet points there. I just made this stuff up. I just was trying to think of things, little things in your life. But I left two spots down at the bottom for your creativity. You can erase all of these and put your own in there. But the concept is if you make little changes every day, if you do little things to improve yourself and to say, I'm going to work on this today, just a little bit. Don't get frustrated. You're going to fail. You're not going to do it every day. But if you just keep at it and you say, oh, I missed yesterday. No big deal. Here we go again today. You're just going to keep pushing away at this. You will be very surprised the changes that happen in your life. And so I'm just encouraging you to do that, to keep this, to pick the ones down at the bottom. Pick two of them. Pick one of them. Don't have to pick two of them. And don't ever get frustrated to say, oh, shoot, I can't do this. I wanted to do this, but I can't. You just say, okay, you know, I'm just going to keep moving at it. I'm going to just keep pushing that, moving the needle just a little bit. And take joy in your celebrations and in your accomplishments. Grab somebody else and say, hey, let's do this together. Let's kind of just encourage each other and say, hey, how you doing with this? and don't say, you know, don't put him in a position, oh, shoot, look at you, you failed again. No, just highlight the good things that people do. Make it a win, make it positive. So I would encourage you to do this. Any questions or comments about this? Make sense? Good. I would encourage you just to try it. Just do one little thing. Again, if you don't like what's on this list, pick something else. Do just a little thing, and it'll make a huge difference when you're 59. You'll think, wow, I wish I had done that. You don't believe it? Nope. Good. Here's my wallet. Here's my driver's license. Yeah. Good point. Thank you. There's no criminals here. Yeah. Yep. So one of the things that we've been doing for a long time, and something that's really important in my life, is reading the Bible. And we know that everybody says that. I have a question for you. What's the most popular book to shoplift? It actually is the Bible. Yep. So, and it's the largest book ever sold or distributed or published or anything, hands down. There's no comparison. They don't really even know how to estimate it because there's been so many of them published and stuff. They estimate in between 2.5 and 6 billion copies in a certain period of time from like 1910 to 1975 or something like that. But it's just, the Bible is by far the most popular book ever. Ever. And yet, we don't read it. And we don't sometimes even have a basic understanding of it. And so what we do is we encourage you to read it, but we don't really help you read it. And so what I wanted to do just for a few minutes today is to, I have these copies of the Bible. There's 12. So I have some copies to pass out. I know we have some here. We'll just do this here, and all right, here's some here, and maybe you can share if you don't have. How many people have a Bible app on their phone?
I got one.
Okay, good. Anybody else? Okay. There's a small print. There's a great Bible app called YouVersion. It's probably the most popular one. YouVersion, 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 huh? That could be. Yep. So I'll look at it when you bring it up. But so it's a good stuff that way, as far as, and it'll even read the Bible to you. You can make it large print. You can change the font. So you can do that. So what's that? It's called YouVersion. Yep. So you can look that up. So what I wanted to do today is to go through one of my favorite passages. If anybody, I brought some actual copies of the Bible part of it.
Oh yeah. There you go.
Yeah. If people would prefer though, prefer these copies, that's fine. There you go. So what I wanted to do, so we want to go to Romans 12. And Romans 12, I didn't do the, it's in the New Testament, so it's probably about two-thirds of the way to the back. It's after, it goes Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, and then Romans. You can look it up in the table of contents too. While we're doing this, I just wanted to give you a little bit of Bible background. There's the Old Testament and the New Testament. There's also the Apocrypha. And the Catholics have some extra books that the Protestants don't recognize. We could talk about more detail with that, but there's normally the Old Testament, which has 39 books in it. I forget. I forget exactly how it's broken down, but there's the Old Testament. And that was primarily the original language that it was written in was Hebrew. And so these were the Jewish people that wrote that, and they wrote it in Hebrew. And they made meticulous copies of it. We don't have any of the original writings, but we have copies and lots of copies, and they take all the copies together and put them together, and then they translate them from Hebrew into English. And that's how we have the different versions.
I have a question. That's something I'm seriously wondering about. Something always gets lost in translation.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder exactly how much got lost in translation from Hebrew to English.
Okay.
Or to whatever other language
Greek. Good.
Put into.
Yep.
Because, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of stuff, and I've been reading it actually here lately.
Good.
And I feel like there's a lot of stuff missing.
Okay.
It feels like there's something missing.
Okay. So the question was, and I'll just repeat it because we record it and we'll put this on the internet, is Danny's asked saying that when you translate from one language to another, it seems like, it feels like things are being lost. And so that's a valid concern. The Hebrew and English don't match up one to one. The New Testament was written in Greek, and so the Greek is a much richer language, for example, than English. They have multiple words like for love. Then, and we have one. And so there are things that could appear to be lost. But the people who do this, as far as the scholars, they're very godly men. They don't. One person doesn't do it. One person doesn't say, okay, I got Mark, I'll translate Mark. No, they have a team of people that do it. And so they're experts in that original language, and they're experts in the theology and the Bible, and of course, English. And so they're very meticulous about translating it. And so I would, the beauty of this, as far as the tools that we have, for example, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but to get too deep, but we have books that show the original Greek language and Hebrew language and the words that are used there. And then you can find those Greek and Hebrew words and go and see the English. And so you can double check and you can audit the translation that's being done. And so you can say, okay, here's a passage, it seems like it's missing, and you can read the Greek words and you can go through and see what the Greek words mean, and then you can say how they translated them in English, and so you can do that yourselves. And I would say, and I might understand the feeling, but I think that they've done a really, really good job of taking the message, the words, and communicating from that previous either Hebrew or Greek and bringing it into English, because it's so important for them to do that. So I would check that out. So good question, good thoughts. And I can help. I would be happy to sit down with you and get you started in that if you want to do that. So
it's on the same line that I mean, just how this first stuff reads. They have like buts or ands or ifs or stuff like that.
Yep. So that does?
All of it.
Yep, yeah. And so, good question. And you're just saying that sometimes the Bible reads weird. Is that basically what you're saying? Yep, yeah. And so, good question. So there's a couple things. One is, one of the original main translations that was done was the King James Version. We've all heard of that, I think. And it was done in 1611 or something like that. And that was when they spoke these and thous and the words that we don't speak now normally. And so that can be kind of confusing. The other thing is they didn't have, again, I said we don't have the original manuscripts. When they did the King James Version, since then, especially with the Dead Sea Scrolls, I don't know if you've heard of that, some caves in there that they discovered, they found new manuscripts. Older manuscripts that they didn't have when they did the King James Version. And so there's better translations now. And then there's different ways to translate. You can try to do it word for word, which it doesn't work very well because English, Greek to English and Hebrew to English don't fit word to word. And so then they can do it thought to thought and to try to do it, say this was the thought that they had to this, And so sometimes the more detailed that they get when they try to make it more like the original, it's harder to read. And so the version I gave you is called the English Standard Version, and it's more of a literal translation. All the way to, there's a translation called the Message, and there's also a translation, it was called the Living Bible. And that was a transliteration where he got it already translated, and he translated it into more modern English. So there's different versions of translations that you might find a lot easier to read, but it won't be as detailed and as scholarly, which a lot of us don't need. So good. Exactly. It doesn't matter. If you can't read it, it doesn't matter. And so that would be my recommendation, is to start with something simpler. The NIV, which a lot of you have, it's called the New International Version. There's two versions that I handed out. There's the ESV and the NIV. And this is, for example, I'll just pull this up. This is the NIV version. This is more readable than the ESV. And so as you're reading the Bible, it's good to try to find a version that you're more comfortable with. Danny?
The New King James.
I believe so, and I'm not positive about that. I think they updated that translation with the latest manuscripts. But I'm not positive about that. But all of that's available.
Did you know they ripped the boys off and found the Dead Sea Scrolls?
One more.
They pretty much stole them scrolls from the boys who found them.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So, and I think, so the question was, it seemed like that they stole the scrolls from the boys that found them, and I think they were throwing rocks, and something broke open, and it shocked them, and so then they, so that was a major discovery. So, good point. So, this is, any other questions, comments? So, what I would like to do is just to start through this as far as, so we've encouraged you to read the Bible, and there's a lot of parts in it that are difficult to understand. There's something called a study Bible. I didn't bring it, but it has the words of the Bible in it, and then down at the bottom it has notes and things to help you as you're reading it to explain things, and I find that really helpful. What you have to do is to realize that the notes down there aren't God's word, but they're people, smart people, who can help you with it. And so you can't take everything you read down there and say that's absolutely true, but it can give you insight from people who have studied it a lot. And so, but what I would like to do is just take a few minutes and to go through, starting with in Romans 11:33 through 36. So I started you in Romans 12, but if you go back just a little bit. And the reason I do that is because at the beginning of Romans 12, it says, "I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God." And whenever it says, therefore, there's a little joke with people who study the Bible, and it says, whenever you see therefore, you have to figure out what it's there for. And so when they say therefore, what that usually implies is they've made a case somewhere else. And so this is the case, therefore something else. And so we want to look back and see what that case is, because he says, "I appeal to you, therefore." And so if we go back just a little ways into Romans 11, 33 through 36, this is like a hymn, a song that's about God. And what's just happened is, if we talk about the book of Romans, was written by Paul, who was, you've probably heard stories about Paul, and struck down at the Damascus Road, and he was killing Christians and stuff, and God struck him, and then he became a Christian, and then an amazing follower of God, and he wrote about half the New Testament. But one of the books he wrote was the book of Romans. And it's a letter. It's literally a letter from Paul to the Christians in Rome. So it's written to Christians. It's not written to people who aren't Christians. And so it was written in Greek. And so he spent... Paul was very smart, and he knows a lot about God and how God works and how things work. And he spent a good portion of the book of Romans up until this point talking about what we call theology, or just teaching teaching about God. And so teaching about who we are and how we become saved and what's going to happen to people who don't get saved, and the power of Christ, and teaching us all of these things. He also, there's a famous part in Romans 7 where he talks about the human condition, and he says, I don't do what I want to do, and I do what I don't want to do. I don't know if you remember that passage, but it talks about the human condition. But he's laid all this theology groundwork stuff, and that's what he does a lot in his books. Is the first part is teaching us about God and more academic type things that's still important, and then he jumps into the practical. And here's where he's transitioning from all this theology stuff to the practical. And so I know I'm probably boring some of you, and I'll try to move this on. But you have to just realize that in the context of thing, there's nothing magic about the Bible. It was written for specific purposes. And so Paul said, I'm going to write a letter to the Romans. And we have that letter. And so as you read it, you have to think, this is a letter to the Roman people. And so... and put it in context. So he's covered all this theology stuff, and then he gets to the end of Romans 11, and he says, "Oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of God! How unsearchable are his judgments, and how inscrutable his ways! For who has known the mind of God, or who has been his counselor, or who has given a gift to him that he might be repaid?" And then it says, "For from him and through him and to him are all things. To him be glory forever. Amen." And so he's done all this theology stuff, and then he just talks about God, and he says these amazing things. And what I like to do, and what I want to just spend a few minutes with you going through, because you can do this. You can pick up the Bible, and you can go through a section, and you can say, you know, I'm just going to kind of camp here for a little while. And so let's start back with at the beginning in 33 for Romans 11:33. It says, "Oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of God." And so, you know, it's easy to go through that. Yeah, of course, God's riches and knowledge and all that stuff. But if we said, you know, "Oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of Anthony," and you know, if we said that, we would think, okay, Anthony's pretty smart, and you know, he knows a lot of stuff, and he knows a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff. And, you know, he'd just be an amazing guy. But to say this about God is even more and more. And so who knows more than God? What is there that God doesn't know? He knows atoms. And I'm talking about electrons and neutrons and protons. He knows down to that level and how it puts it all together and how it makes all this stuff that you see everywhere and how those atoms works. He knows universes. He knows millions of light years away stuff. And he knows your thoughts, and he designed and created it all. And so he put it all together and made it work together. And he knows what and why and how about everything. And he knows the number of hairs on your head. And we sang that "Who Am I" song, and it just reminds us of how great God is and how much he loves us. And so that, "Oh, the depth and riches and wisdom and knowledge of God," it's just good to step back and think about how smart God is and how just incomparable he is to us. And the next part, it says, "How unsearchable are his judgments and how inscrutable his ways." Anybody know what inscrutable means?
Perfect.
Okay.
Undeniable.
Yep. Good. The dictionary I had, impossible or to understand or interpret. So right along consistent with that. So how he thinks and why is impossible to completely understand, even if we search for it the rest of our lives. And so you just can't figure out everything. How did he decide how the clouds work and how they rain down, and then that same water comes up and it cleanses the earth and then becomes clouds again, and just enough so Mick can have his crops that he can grow and sell, and yet to less godly people to be worried about whether it's going to actually happen or not. And there's just so much, and Mick could probably talk for hours about the amazingness of God in farming, and he knows all of that, and we can't understand it. The next part says, "For who has known the mind of God, or who has been his counselor?" And so, who can say, "I know God, I know him, I got him"? I, you know, We can't. It's impossible. You can't say, I understand him. And who of you have given him advice? Who's given God advice? Hey, no, don't do it that way. Do it this way. Yeah. So we do that sometimes. We think, no, I don't agree with God. I know how to do this. And look where it gets us. But who has said, I know better than God? And so, you know, just to think about that. And then the next part says, who has given a gift to him that he might be repaid? And I looked at this, and who can say, God owes me? I did something or gave God something, and he owes me something. We can't say that. We can say that to other people, but we can't say that to God. And there's just nothing that we can do or give where God has to repay us, because he owns everything and he has everything. And then it says, for from him and through him and to him are all things. And so for from him, so he created everything, and through him, it came through him. That everything that's been created is what he did. And to him, and so it's all to his glory. And so we can sit and just be amazed. And so I wanted to just to go through that. The next, we'll go to the next section, which is actually the practical session, and I won't spend as much time doing that, but I kind of want to get you started. This is one of my favorite passages in the Bible from a practical standpoint as far as how to live. And when it kind of grabs me and I read it, and it says, what should Marvin do? And what should I learn from this? What should I change? So when we look at Romans 12, 1 through 21, and we're not going to go through all of that, but it starts with, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God. And Paul is appealing. He's begging. He's saying, this is important for you. And so that's why he says, I appeal to you, because he realizes how important it is, and he wants us to be able to take advantage of this. And he says, brothers. And so it's Christian brothers. It's people he loves and cares about. And then it says, by the mercies of God. And when you say mercy is not getting things that we deserve. And so grace is getting things that we don't deserve. Mercy is not getting things that we do deserve. So, for example, if you stand before the judge and you've committed a crime, and he says, you know, you deserve 5 years in prison, but because of your attitude and because of this and because of that, I'm going to let you go today. That's mercy. And so there's the mercies of God, that God is just so merciful for us, because we don't always do the right things. We often don't, and we're sinful underneath. But he loves us so much, and he shows us mercy all the time. And so it's good to be reminded of that. And so then he goes on and he says, because I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. And what that means is in the past, they used to take cows and sheep and kill them, and drain the blood and as a sacrifice. We don't need to go into details with that, but that was what was providing the punishment for sins of that. And so that was the sacrifice that was being made, and they died. The animals died. And so what God is asking here is for us to be a living sacrifice. And so that means to wholeheartedly serve him, to change our life to become his slave. And we hate that word slave. But one thing to think about is we're all slaves to something. And I know we don't like to think about that, but we are. We struggle. We don't do what we want to do all the time because of the struggles that we have. And so what he's asking us to do, what he's begging us to do, is to become slaves to God instead of slaves to ourselves, instead of slaves to drugs, instead of slaves to sex, instead of slaves to our feelings. And he's asking us to be slaves to God, to choose who we're going to serve, because we're going to serve somebody. And we all serve somebody. And so he's asking us to do that. And It's saying to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. And so if God is so great and knows so much and loves so much, then we can trust him with our lives. And that's what he's asking us to do here as far as a living sacrifice. And that's what Paul is urging us to do. And then I will just go through one more section here. It says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. And so a lot of people, you know, we think we're free. We think we can do what we want. We, you know, we just, but we are conformed to this world a lot of times. We think like this world. And this world lies to us. It says things are really important when they're not. And it says having things is really, really important when it's not. And you look at it, anybody who has a lot of things, and it just doesn't bring happiness. And we have this perspective that this is right now is the most important time ever and that ever will be. And so we focus on it and we try to optimize it. But really, the truth of the matter is eternity is the most important, where we spend eternity. And this life is really so short. Back to 59 years old, it just goes by so quickly. And what becomes important will show up clearly when we stand before God. That's when it'll all be very clear to say, wow, how should I have spent my time here on earth? Instead of focusing on a lot of different things that seem so important today. And that's what it's talking about. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. And the world thinks that it's good to be greedy. It's good to be selfish. Go for it. Get what you can. That things are important. That you can be run by your feelings and desires. Oh, I love this. Oh, this is just awesome. And a lot of the stuff that we love and we go after are fleeting, and they disappear, and they disappoint us. And so what he's asking us to do is to change from our natural way of thinking to more of a godly way of thinking, more of an eternal perspective way of thinking. And so, again, from a time standpoint, I'm not going to keep going here, but I would encourage you to, if you want, you can keep the Bible, if you'll read it, if you'll take advantage of it. I'm happy to do that. That's what they're there for. But then I would encourage you to keep going through that, because it talks about on down as far as it talks about how to get along with people. It talks about loving others with brotherly affection. Let love be genuine. Abhor evil. Hold fast to what is good. It talks about how we're all part of a bigger body, and we all have our different roles. And it's good that we're not all the same, that we need each other to complement each other. And it gives practical advice like that. It says, do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord, rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation. We all have tribulation. Be constant in prayer, contribute to the needs of the saints, and show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. All of these things, when I read this, I try to study it and think, how can I do this in my life? And that's what, when we read the Bible, we have that opportunity to do that, is to take passages like this and say, how can this affect my life? A lot of times what I do personally is I see where it says stuff like, bless those who persecute you. And I think, whoa, that's not me. But it should be. How can I figure out how to do that? Can you really bless people who persecute you? And how do I do that? How do I go through that process? How do I change from resenting people who persecute me and wanting to hurt them to blessing them? And how do I go through that process? And how do I get God to help me to do that? So that's kind of what I wanted to go over. I would encourage you to take some passages of the Bible as you read through it. There's lots of amazing ones that you can just stop and say, I'm going to just camp out here for a little while and see what this says. And like you said, if it's confusing, if it doesn't make any sense, maybe grab a different version of it. That U version has tons of different translations. And so you can say, well, okay, what's the Living Bible say here? What's the Message say here? What's what's the ESV say? And you can take time and to do that. So I would encourage you to do that. And you can make this as part of one of your move the needle things. So, any comments or questions?
I was just going to say my own experience reading the Bible. Maybe as Catholics, we don't, weren't taught to read the Bible much, of course, Mass and stuff that way. But I can't tell you how many times I pick up the Bible and start reading, and I just have trouble getting into it. He said this, that. So I guess what really motivated me was, back in, I think, 1992, the Catholic Church has a program called Christ Renews His Parish. People from different parishes get together. So I got in a group of 10 men, pretty much my age. And I'm telling you, that just made all the difference in the world, reading the Bible with people. And some of them were, more knowledgeable. So I would strongly recommend, if you've got anybody that, you can read the Bible with, it really, really helps.
Great. Great point. Thanks, Mick. Anthony.
I want to say, in the Bible, if you're recovering and you want to stay sober, this paper's great. Mm-hmm. What I started to do was I totally cut out television. Gone. Done. It's hard to do, but if you really want to work recovery, this is just as good as an AA book. It's the Bible to me stands for basic instructions before leaving Earth. It's simple guidelines on how to live, and it's really, if you get an NIV version, it's really simple to read and understand if you get an NIV version. And just 5 minutes a day, even it's that. And like he said, having somebody to read with and really study it is awesome. If you get into reading the Bible and you want to look up where things were and where the temples were and where the gates were, it makes the Bible come alive. And you can also go through on Google and find, let's say you want to read a story, because the Bible jumps a lot because it's different viewpoints. Different people write different books in the Bible, so it's a different viewpoint of the story. So if you want to read about one person, let's say David or Samuel, you can go to Google, and everywhere that David's referenced in the Bible, you're going to find it on Google or whoever. And you can read it almost like it's a story. So you'll learn all about David, or you'll learn all about Samuel, or you'll learn all about, most of those are right in my book, but I'm just saying, you can go that way too, and that way it's more like a story, and you can kind of understand, who's who and what's what. 5 minutes a day to start out is worth it. I don't know, it's worth it.
To me, each person probably got their favorite book, but I just love Proverbs. And Proverbs is really wisdom. And I'm telling you, any question you have about what should I do, if you read Proverbs, there's an answer to it. Some of you probably know the story, but if you remember Solomon, who was David's son, and basically David, or God, pretty much took it away from David because of that, because he wanted to build the temple, and he said, "No, your son's going to do it." So when Solomon took over as king, he was 14 or very young, and so he basically said, "God, I'm too young," basically. And so he asked that God would give him the wisdom of, I don't know how many thousand people the Israelites were. And God was so pleased because Solomon didn't ask for, personal wealth or long life or anything. He just said, "Give me the wisdom to judge all these people." And how many of you know what God told him when he asked that question? Anybody know? Basically said, God said to Solomon, "Because you've not asked for personal things," he said, "I'll make you the wealthiest and the wisest man that ever lived." And so he did. So Solomon has basically written, Proverbs, and so it's all there, and he's the wisest man on earth, or he ever will be. So Proverbs, it's just the neatest thing. If you got a question, you can look it up, and he'll give you really, really good advice. I just really recommend Proverbs.
Thanks. Good, Nick. One of the things, just piggybacking off of that, for those who don't read the Bible now and haven't read the Bible, Proverbs is kind of in the middle. It's right after Psalms. But it has 31 chapters in it. And so a lot of people will just get into the habit of whatever day it is. Today's August 7th, so they'll read the 7th chapter of Proverbs. Tomorrow they'll read the 8th, the 9th, and when they get to the 30th or 31st, they'll start all over. And so you can do that. So that's an opportunity to do that. So
one more quick story, how smart Solomon was. There's a story about two prostitute women. They both had children. And it's kind of hard to follow that, but basically one of the prostitutes, I think the Bible says, laid on this little baby and killed it. And so the other prostitute said, well, that other baby's mine. And so they were trying, they went back and forth, whose baby was it? So they went before Solomon, they said, he's the wisest, let him decide whose baby it is. So he basically, they both said it was their baby. So Solomon said, take a sword, cut the baby in two.
Yep.
And the woman whose baby it really was, no, give it to her. Solomon said, give it to this woman. He knew it was hers.
Nice.
Good.
One more thing.
Go ahead, Anthony.
Just one more quick thing. The Bible, if you need some uplifting, they've occurred from the Bible. The Bible is chock full of people who are broken and just some of the worst people that God turned around and used for good because of what they've been through and what they've experienced. So I just want anybody to ever think that just because of your past or whatever that you can't change other lives. I mean, the people wrote part of the Bible from behind prison. That man changed a life. Paul, right?
Yep.
Paul wrote most of the New Testament behind bars. So, at least his letter to the church.
Yep.
And, that man did that from behind jail wall. So, you can do anything. It don't matter what you've done. So, I just want to say that, too.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.